I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to minute 129 of season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a capitalist journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and join me once again to finish off his stint this season is Joe Amadei, a film historian and the CEO of Virgil Films Entertainment. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
So happy to be here. Really, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it really has. I've been loving your stories about everyone that you've met.
Yeah, yeah, I have the stories of people that didn't want to meet me that met me, but we'll get into them later at another podcast.
People that didn't want to meet you, why would they not want to meet you? You know.
All right, I'll tell you the worst moment. Okay. So you know who Lauren? Sure. You know who Lauren Bacall is?
Yeah, of course.
So
Bogey's wife.
Bogey's wife. So I'm at a premiere. We had a movie with Paul Newman years ago called, I think it's called Where the Money Is. So we're in New York City, and there's a premiere, and I'm standing in the lobby, and Paul Newman comes up by. You know, I say hi. Joanne Woodward is with him. I say hi, and then I see Lauren Bacall coming towards. You know, towards the lobby, which is right where I'm standing. She's got to walk right past me. And as she's getting close to me, I said, hi, Betty. Cause you know, her friends called her Betty Bacall. And she put her nose up and she said, only my friends call me Betty. And she walked right by me.
Yeah. that could sting.
That stung. Only my friends call me Betty.
That's right.
Like, whatever, you know? Yeah, she nailed me pretty good. Everybody else just laughed, you know?
Understandable.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, has nothing to do with It's a Wonderful
Life. It doesn't matter. It has to do with your movie history. That's what it comes down to. So minute 129 begins with the singing continuing and ends with Mary wondering out loud. Yeah, so we'll have to figure out what that is. But yesterday we talked about there's no longer a warrant out for his arrest, and basically even the bank examiner decided to chip in. So yeah, and you know, but none of it's necessary anyway. Because Sam Wainwright
rode that white horse in, and he really gives the money to Mary, but he says it's to George. But what are you going to do? Because again, Mary's the hero.
Yeah. Well, again, I have a problem with the fact. Right, Harry is the hero. Well, Harry and George are both heroes. Yeah. But whatever. The problem that I have with the whole thing with Sam Wainwright is, you know, going back, I mean, we talked about this beforehand, but, you know, when Mrs. Hatch was trying to, you know, get Sam and Mary together, you know, Sam Wainwright's going to be calling and stuff like that. They always give us the impression that Sam is interested in Mary.
Yes.
You know, that he's trying to court her. But while doing this podcast, I came to the realization that, you know, during those scenes when Sam is on the phone, there's a yes. woman that's there with him. You know, he's already got someone. Nope. He doesn't need Mary. So I just, you know, it really burst my bubble from that perspective, because I always thought that, okay, There was this tension between, George and Sam over Mary, but in the end, there really wasn't because Sam didn't care. So it made me wonder why he was calling. The only reason that he theoretically could be calling is because he wanted investors, and that was it. And who are the best people to get to invest, your 20-something year old friends who don't have a pot to piss in anyway, so I don't know. I've always had a problem with that fact, especially when, I've now noticed that Sam is, I guess tapping hands with a
And he
woman in New
has,
York at the same time.
like we spoke about
So.
earlier, he has a lot of money. And now he's in London.
Yes. Well,
Right.
he has more money now than he did 12 years ago.
And he's in,
Because the war,
He
I
did.
mean, he
I
made a
think he
lot of money
profited
during the
in
war
like arms and stuff
because of
like that,
plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's
Exactly.
an arms dealer. He's an
Or
Exactly.
we can say so much about Sam Wainwright that we
So
won't.
that's right. Sam Wainwright
Yeah,
was
his
his
real
Potter's
last name,
protege.
Sam Potter.
That's right. He's looking forward to eventually taking over, Bedford Falls
Exactly,
when
yes,
Potter's
he's
no
just
longer
waiting.
around. So, in this minute, Hark, the Herald Angel sings, and they continue singing at the beginning of this minute. And the character, we have the sheriff still singing, and then we get a shot of Eustace, who has a very funny scarf on him, but he's sitting there with an adding machine, counting up the money that's been brought in, for him, dollar by dollar,
Dollar by
which goes back to what we
dollars.
said 2 days ago, that nobody cares where those dollars came from. They're not going back. These are now all part
No,
of
they're
the
not going
Bailey
back. No,
building and
they're
loan.
not alone. Yes.
That's what it comes down to.
They're giving of their pocket, but they're giving through their heart. And they're taking care of a fellow of their neighbor. They're looking out for their neighbor. Their neighbor is George, and neighbors are George and Mary, and George's business enabled them to have their homes and to have their businesses by supplying them with loans, community based. And the evil empire, Henry Potter, which some people labeled as the evil fascist,
That's
wanted to
right.
take it all away. And again, as we've spoken about, imprint can be said today. The story could be told again today, only with different characters. Because it still
Right.
exists.
Which
It
goes back
still
to what you said
exists.
about what you heard Capra say about the fact that he wants his stories to be timeless, and they are.
Yes. And they are.
Which is very cool to think about, that he was able to create something 78 years ago that even, I mean, in the story you told, he said 50 years, and here we are close to 80 years later, and it still resonates.
Yeah, and John Doe is, he yells at him. James, gosh, I'm forgetting his name. He's in a couple Capra films, but he looks at Edward Arnold and he says, "Can't beat the people," And again, it's the common man, and it's the normal folks that live anywhere in this world that always seem to be up against the wall when it comes to dealing with decisions that are made by their governments, and the governments are making decisions based on what the rich people want them to do, and it continues to happen. So the average citizen is still fighting for their livelihood and their life and their happiness, and sometimes
Right.
these things get in the way. Which is why It's a Wonderful Life and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and Meet John Doe and a lot of the other films that Capra made
Yeah,
still
it's true.
work as
And
films today.
what's very interesting is if you look at the movies people make nowadays, they don't seem as timeless. At least
No, they don't. Most of them are not timeless at all.
No,
And
those
I'm
are
not even
timeless,
talking about the
but
Marvel
whatever.
films. That's a whole different conversation. They won't be there. Yeah, they're not even remembered a week later. You can't remember the plots because they're all the same, but there's no one out there. Well, there's no Capras, there's no John Fords, there's no Howard Hawks, and maybe Spielberg's films will last, but they're different. They're not, they're fantasy, a lot of them. But though, Schindler's will last, Schindler's List will last forever, and Saving Private Ryan will last forever, but they're historical stories, not like
I'm sure there are
Capra's were.
directors who have made recently films that are more connected to the common man, I guess you can say.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, there are. They're not heralded, and most of the time they don't get good reviews because people consider them Cornish or Capra-esque, which is a word that I find to be, I would love to release a movie or make a movie or have anything that I've ever worked on considered Capra-esque. But there's certain critics out there that just think they're corny. Think they're too homespun, and that's one of the problems that we have. Capra told stories that some of the characters and some of the things, especially you're learning or you're seeing when you do minute by minute, they're fantasy, but at the same time the overall storyline that he's trying to tell is real, because it's about, most of his stories are about real people. And Capra did have his own, Arsenic and Old Lace, and some of the other films he made do not fall into this category. His later films, Pocketful of Miracles, A Hole in the Head, they don't work as well as the older films do. And that seems to be the case of most film directors when they get older, unfortunately. But it seems to be a case with the later films of Ford and Howard Hawks and William Wyler are obviously not as good as their films from the 30s and 40s when they were at the prime of their careers. But it's a Wonderful Life, because it's Capra's and Stewart's first films after the war, and both of them went through hell, during the war. And both of them obviously made this film suffering from PTSD. They had to have it because of what they went through. It shows in the storyline, and it shows in the film, and it really shows in Stewart's performance. And they never discussed that, because back then, I guess, no one even knew what PTSD was. But it's so apparent that they both came back shell-shocked. All of those guys did, that were part of, the effort to overthrow Hitler. It's, those guys that went into, make their documentaries and things like that, and cover the war, Capra and Wyler and John Huston and definitely George Stevens. He was affected. He was the king of romantic comedies, and he never made one again when he came home from the war. So, this film, and I think Capra and his partners in Liberty hoped that this film would springboard them into a whole bunch of others, and
True.
unfortunately, it didn't.
So back to what's going on here, right now
Yeah.
with the, they have all the singing, and then Ernie looks back, points, and then starts clapping and goes, "Hey, Harry Bailey."
This is talk about fantasy. This all
That's
happens in
right.
like 20 minutes.
What do you mean 20 minutes? This happens in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm being kind to Capra. You're right. It happens in like 5 minutes. Harry's able to not go to Washington, fly
That's
through a
right.
snowstorm, land, get picked up, and get there in time
That's
to
right.
give it,
And
to
then,
do what he does in the next minute. And it's so obvious that it's
yeah.
totally ridiculous, even for the very first time watching it. But it's so, what happened? Well, once we go through what Harry does, it makes the whole film, So Ernie right. says Harry Bill.
And then Harry says, George, you old son of a gun. And then George looks over and goes, Harry. And then Harry says, looks like I got here too late.
He's got snow all over him.
The snow here always looks really soapy and, you know, funny looking because of the way that they, created the snow for this movie. And then Bert makes his way to the front also, and Bert goes, Mary, I got him here from the airport just as quick as I could. The fool flew all the way up here in a blizzard. So does that mean that Bedford Falls has its own airport? Or is it that?
It's not anywhere near an airport. It's not anywhere. It's the closest would be like Albany, and back in 45, there probably wasn't. In the, you know, why is it like drive. LaGuardia? In a snowstorm. Yeah. Makes no sense.
Well, no, whatsoever. But also think about the timing right now. Bert saw George at the at the bridge. And Bert still had time to drive all the way to wherever he needed to drive, pick up Harry, and then get back in the time that George has to run through Bedford Falls and get to his house. So
yes.
That's no, true. It's great. Maybe Bedford Falls really is a very large. I mean, they talk about the fact that they're I think close to Rochester. I think that's what they said at some point. So
they do. Yes. Yes. As if Rochester had a huge airport.
When you have the hero Harry Bailey showing up, you're going to make sure that you have planes being able to land. I don't know.
Well, Harry wasn't flying commercial, obviously. He was probably flying a military flight, and they made a special case to
and,
get him.
And anybody who's seen it, anybody who's seen Best Years of Our Lives knows that it's very easy to get onto a military aircraft that'll take you wherever you need to go. Yes. That's that one already movie, has been done way. Movies by minute. So,
yes.
And then George screams out, he goes, Harry, how about your banquet in New York? Now, wasn't Ma Bailey also supposed to be at that banquet? Because she was in Washington, so she somehow got home quicker also. You know, and then his response is, well, I left right in the middle of it as soon as I got Mary's telegram. So it's a good thing Mary knew where to find it. Like, it goes back to what we were saying yesterday. Mr. Gower knew how to find Sam Wainwright, and Mary knows how to find Harry Bailey in New York City at a banquet.
Yeah.
It's a little too convenient, but okay. Why not? And I love how Bert has an accordion. That's right.
All of a sudden.
He picked him up and brought an accordion with him. And then Ernie starts passing out little strange cups of booze. Because, yeah, of course. But I'm saying the cup looks really weird.
They need, well, it was 1945. They couldn't edit, improvise. You know, there was a war, and you know they didn't have any tin cups or anything like that.
That's true. And then Harry says, "Good idea, Ernie. A toast to my big brother George, the richest man in town." And everyone cheers. That's right.
And it hits you at that moment. And that's when the tears begin. They really start a couple of minute, you know, when you realize what's happening.
Yeah.
The eyes start to water up. And now when he calls him the richest man in town, we know what he means. He doesn't mean, really, it's the heart.
And what I like about it is that everyone besides George understands that to have friends makes you rich. George is the only one who doesn't realize it.
Everybody. No, George needs to have his entire life wiped out and to be shown what that means to realize.
That's right.
It takes him a long time. It takes him until this moment.
That's right.
And the help of an angel coming down from him.
We can see that George is overwhelmed with joy about the way that everyone's acting around him. And then everyone starts singing Auld Lang Syne. And then George happens to notice that in the pile of
Yes.
money that Eustace is going through, there's a book sitting in the middle of the pile. And he picks it up and sees that it's Tom Sawyer. And then he opens it up and
Yes.
we get to read the dedication that's written there, and it says, "Dear George, remember, no man is a failure who has friends." And for what's great is that you have the word no underlined and the word friends. And then it says, "Thanks for the
Yep.
wings. Love, Clarence." So in other words, they had some buffalo wings beforehand. Yeah.
But at this point, the tears are falling down your cheek. I mean, at this point, and these are tears of happiness, and these are now George really knows, and he knows that it's Clarence that got him where this point, and he also knows it's Mary that got the money. But he knows that the friends that he has, that's why he's the richest man in town. Doesn't have anything to do with money. And that, it closes, it just about closes the story. Obviously, something's going to happen in the next minute or two that we won't discuss. But at this point, you're blubbering at this point. You're so happy. You're so relieved that, everything's going to be okay. And, the emotions are just running raw at this point. And it's great. It's great. Even though all of the things that we've been discussing over the past day or two, 3 days, none of them are real. A lot of it's fantasy. There's, when you if you really get into it, there's no way Harry can get there. There's no way Garrick can hit every house up in Bedford Falls. All of these things. It's akin to a house dropping on a witch, and a little finding a scarecrow, a Tin Man and a Cowardly Lion. You suspend your disbelief, but this really works. And Capra, something happens in the next minute that we won't get into, and it's pure Capra, what he does with the camera, that brings you back to these are real people. Even though they're actors, they look like the guy around the corner. Looks like your next door neighbor, and
Well,
that's what I like. One of the things I like the
that's what he
best about
tries to
Capra,
do. He tries to,
and the best about
we
this
talked
minute.
about it the last few days. The Capra always wanted people to, look at themselves that they could be this character. Yeah, he does it really well. And the minute is
Yes.
capped off by Mary looking at George and saying to him, "Who's that?" After having read the dedication herself. And I guess people are just gonna have to wait till tomorrow to actually find out who that is or what his response is as to who that.
A great minute. It's a great minute. The 3 minutes that I've done, are three of the of my favorite moments in this film, and I
It's
have
my honor,
been
not
honored
yours.
to be able to
It's my
discuss them
honor.
with
It's
you.
my honor that the stars aligned for us to be able to do these minutes together. So yeah, they really did. All right. So every
They
Friday we
sure did,
have
didn't they?
a segment
Sure
called
did.
Oscar Oops, where the idea behind it is over the last 96 years of the Oscars, every year there is some sort of controversy that people disagree with some of the decisions that the Academy members make, and despite the fact that most of us are not Academy members and will never be, we still get to give our opinions on what movies we think should have won instead of the ones that actually won. So this segment deals with Best Picture nominees over the years. What movies, what top five movies do my guests believe should have taken home the Oscar for Best Picture instead of the eventual winner? So, Joe, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
If you don't mind, I being as someone who loves every aspect of cinema, and in particular loves classic cinema going all the way back to silent days. And I've had the same conversation with people of what should have won instead of what did win for Best Picture or Best Actor, or Best Actress. You know, the Academy Awards are of its time, meaning in 1996, when The English Patient wins, at that time, most people felt that it was, the best picture of the year. In retrospect, when you look back and you see that it was up against something like Fargo or some of the other films that were nominated, then you change your mind, and it's not really fair to The English Patient. Now there are some cases where, when Shakespeare in Love, that most people feel, beat out Saving Private Ryan because Harvey Weinstein spent millions and millions of dollars getting that film in Shakespeare in Love in front of people that he bought the Oscar. Whether or not that's, I don't know how many Oscar voters vote because they see more ads in Variety for one film than another. So by saying, Around the World in 80 Days should not have won, best film, it's taking a hell of a lot away from the filmmakers that made Around the World in 80 Days. Because at that time, the movie was very, very popular. Probably the only time the Academy has ever gotten it actually right is their first ceremony. Because in the very first year of the Academy Awards,
well, they gave out two of them.
Best Picture.
That's right.
They give out two. Why they stop? And it made perfect sense. Wings was a huge hit. Sunrise, probably the better film, but it was an artistic, incredible on the artistic level. They should have kept on doing that. It would have solved a whole lot of problems. But listen, I can go back to Moonlight. I thought La La Land should have won. I can go back, to American Beauty, when I thought The Sixth Sense should have won, and I can almost do this every year that I didn't agree with what ended up being the best picture. To me, this is going to sound crazy, but I would have chosen Butch Cassidy over Midnight Cowboy. I would have chosen Funny Girl definitely over Oliver. But you have to put yourself in the bodies of the Academy voters during that particular time and what was going on and what was in their, what was in their heads. I mean, Annie Hall beat Star Wars. It's very hard to even think about it. Ordinary People, which is a great, Ordinary People is a perfect example because it won during the year that Raging Bull, which most people consider a perfect movie, was nominated. People probably didn't vote for Raging Bull because of its violence and its blood and its, where Ordinary People was a little bit easier to vote for. And everybody loved Redford at the time, and he directed it. And Chariots of Fire beats out Raiders of the Lost Ark. Again, you look back at it.
Well, at the time, it didn't beat Raiders of the Lost Ark. At the time, it beat Reds. Because the in 81... it was Reds. I mean,
it was Reds.
Warren Beatty took home the Oscar for Best Director, and everyone was shocked when he didn't get Best Picture there.
Shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and somewhere, 10 years ago when the media, really got to be what it is today, the word snub started coming up. Now it's become, commonplace to say this person was snubbed or this movie was snubbed. And whenever I read those reports or I see these folks on TV saying that, even this year, these are the snubs. I'm like, okay, well, why don't you tell me, you never tell me what film or what actor,
actress that's right,
would you have eliminated?
that's one of my issues with the fact that they expanded it to 10 movies as Best Picture. Okay, so because then you can't ask the question, okay, which five, if they were only doing five, which of them should be there? Works the same way.
Yeah, and I mean, in the beginning, in the first, 10 years, I don't have the exact dates, there was more than five nominees
it was,
for Best
It was up
Picture.
until 1945, I think, or 1943, I think, was the last year that they had a lot of, they had 10.
But now it gets to a point where probably four of the top 10 nominees, it's almost like they're stretching to find a film to fit into that, you know, to make it 10. And that defeats the purpose. The Academy, you know, they can't get out of their own way sometimes. When I say the Academy, I'm not even talking about the membership. I'm talking about the management of the Academy, because they're the ones that create this. It's, you know, but again, I always, and I have this conversation all the time. The Greatest Show on Earth comes up all the time, because it was nominated the same year as Quiet Man and High Noon. And, you know, they talk about that film as if it's, you know, a really, really bad film because it won the Academy Award for Best Film and High Noon didn't. Well, at the time, the Academy membership thought that The Greatest Show on Earth was the best film of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they wouldn't vote the same way 3 years later or 4 years later. Maybe they voted that way because High Noon was, you know, had some blacklist folks that had been blacklisted working on it. I don't know. But it, you know, it could be any of these reasons.
And anyone who's seen The Fablemans knows, you know, why, you know, The Greatest Show on Earth was so integral to the movie history.
Yeah. 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 That's true. Yeah. So it's just, you know, saying this film should have won over that film or they made a mistake. Again, it's almost like saying, you know, if you're going to, you know, if this actress was snubbed or if Barbie Best Director was snubbed, you know, Gerwig didn't get a directing nomination. Who are you going to kick out?
All right. I understand that.
Yeah. So am I disappointed a lot when I watch the Oscars? Yeah, sure. You got to be, you know. Do I think there's favoritism? Without a doubt, you know. And that could be why Shakespeare in Love. I mean, I experienced it. I was very fortunate. My wife and I got to go to the Oscars twice.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, we went twice. And the first year we went, we had Gosford Park.
Nominated for Best 2001.
And a Beautiful Mind won. It's great because we were with the Altman party, and everybody thought Altman could maybe take Best Director because he was old, and everybody knew, you know, he only had maybe one or two films left with him. So we're with the entire Altman crowd the whole night, and they don't win, and we're leaving the Dolby Theater to go to the party afterwards, and we're walking with Clive Owen and Emily Watson. And my wife and I are walking with Emily Watson, and Emily Watson says, these are just things that you remember. She says, bullocks, Bob should have won. And I never heard anybody say bullocks like, to me in person before. And we commiserated with the whole cast and crew that night. But the second year we were there with the movie Traffic. And I really thought Traffic
was going to win. That was actually the year before.
Was it the year before? Yeah. So yeah. We were there with Traffic, and Gladiator won. And I think Soderbergh, who directed Traffic, won Best Director.
And that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we didn't take Best Picture. And so to this day, I think Traffic is a better film. But, you know, I worked for the company that made it, and I worked on the home entertainment release of the film, and, you know, worked on the commentary on the DVDs and stuff like that. So I got to know everybody. And, you know, here's an interesting fact where it ties everything together, because everything goes in a circle. So Traffic was produced, I think, I want to make sure I'm right here, by Zwick, Edward Zwick.
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. Edward Zwick and his business partner, help me out here. They created 30 something, the TV show.
Okay.
And they named their production company Bedford Falls. That's correct. The name.
Okay, I'm aware of that. Yes.
Which just ties into right. everything.
But that never worked. They never got into.
Zwick just came out with a book that I have, but I haven't read it yet. That I hear it's great. So when I remember talking to them on the phone and saying, obviously, Bedford Falls is It's a Wonderful Life, and they're like, it's amazing that you know that, Joe.
Marshall Hershkowitz
in Hollywood. Marshall, yeah. And they're like, most people don't even get put the two together. They don't even know what Bedford Falls is. And they sent me a hat that I still have, and the hat, like a baseball cap, on the front of the hat is. The house, they're, you know, Mary and George's house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And that was their favorite movie, both of them.
Right. Okay. I mean, again, that goes the same thing with your company works the same way, too. You named your company after one of your favorite movie characters. Yeah. So.
I did. Yeah.
Which so, I, yeah, guess, so I guess it makes sense.
It does. You know, yeah, and when I went to name our company, we came up with an exhaustive list of names, and nothing came to me. And then a friend of mine just casually said to me, you know, do you love movies? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, what made you love movies? And The Great Escape came to my mind, and that's where Virgil came from. Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's just
very happy
that you said that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So am I. Because that's how I got in touch with you.
Yeah. So what time are the Oscars aired?
This year it started at 1 a.m., which is the earliest year, of when it usually starts at 3:30 in the morning. And I've only missed it twice over the last 35 years, both times for technical issues, not because I wasn't up. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
About 5 years ago, I just it didn't work trying to watch it. So I had to I had a friend that was texting me as everything was going on. And in 2004, my cable was on the fritz. And again, I had a friend, you know, texting me as each award came out. You know, I prefer watching it live. You know, but yes,
I will tell you one Oscar story during the year for Gosford Park. So we went to Gosford to the Oscars for Gosford Park, and it was announced about a month before the Oscars, maybe 2 months before the Oscars, that the company was closing. We were all going to be out of work by the end of the year, and it was being taken over by Universal. The company was USA. It was owned by Barry Diller, and he sold the whole ball of wax to Universal. We were going to be melded into Universal, and none of us had a chance of going of keeping our job. So we went to the Oscars, and my wife and I were given two tickets to the Governor's Ball, which is nobody gets tickets to the Governor's Ball. So we go to the Governor's Ball, and the only Oscar that Gosford Park won was, I believe, it was
that's
the
right.
best writer.
Julian Fellows.
Julian Fellows, yeah. So we go, and, you know, we're looking around, and, I mean, you know, it's all the stars in heaven are there. And we sit at our table. There's nobody at the table. We get sitting at table next to us is Marissa Tomei, who's looking as beautiful as Marissa Tomei looks in person. And there's a thing in the middle of the table, an Oscar, you know, like a centerpiece. So I grabbed it and I looked at my wife and I said, I'd like to thank my wife for coming to me for this Oscar. And then we hear behind me, what the hell are you doing? That's my Academy Award. And I turn around and it's Julian Fellows, and he's sitting at our table and I got his Oscar in my hand. I thought we was a centerpiece.
That is really funny.
So, I mean, what do you say? You know, and luckily, Julian Fellows is the nicest guy in the world. And he's laughing his butt off because he sees the look of horror in my face and my wife's face. So I hand him the Oscar and we sat and had dinner with him. And Yeah, that, you know, that's up there with Hi, Betty.
Oh, wow. That is a great story. Yeah. I got to hold an Oscar once also. But I got to hold it with permission.
Yeah, I had no permission. It was his Oscar, you know. Nice guy.
This happened in 1992. Yeah, 1992, I believe. Yeah. I was at a comedy club where Richard Belzer was performing. And I was there with some friends, and we were sitting there watching the show. And then this woman comes over, and she's carrying what looks like an Oscar in her hand. And I was like, okay, that's very strange. And then, I start talking to her, and I ask her, you know, is that a real Oscar? And she says, of course it is. And I was like, wow, well, you know, where do you have this real Oscar from? And she goes, oh, it's mine. I won it, a few months ago. And I'm like, and now, you know, as I just mentioned, I'm an Oscar fan, and I look at her and I'm like, I don't recognize who this woman is. You know, like, it's very strange that this is what she's, you know, that she's telling this story, but okay. And I say to her, okay, well, who are you? And then she looks at me and she says, well, I'm a really good friend of Richard Belzer, and I wanted to, you know, come in and show him my Oscar that I won. And I'm like, okay, but what did you win? You know, where'd you win this? So then I basically turned to her and I said, okay, well, who, you know, what did you win this Oscar for? And she said, well, I made a documentary. I was like, okay. And then she tells me that her name is Barbara Trent. And she won the Oscar in 1993. Basically the awards show from 1992 for a documentary, The Panama Deception.
Wow.
Which was all about, the story with Noriega and Noriega. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Barbara Trent was the director and she won an Oscar for it. And so I said, well, can I hold the Oscar? And she's like, sure. She let me hold the Oscar. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to keep it. And she's like, no,
they're heavy.
That I can't let you do.
They are heavy.
Yes, it was heavier. It was heavier than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can always say that I held an Oscar.
Yes, you can.
And like I said, I had purpose. I had it on purpose, not like you.
If you ever go to the, if you ever go to Los Angeles and you go to the Academy Museum, they have a room that you go into and you hold an Oscar and they take a picture.
And you can give a speech.
Right? And you give a speech. It doesn't work very well, but like, you know. Yeah. I've been lucky. Exactly. I've gotten a hold of a couple and I was holding one that night. Very cool. I wasn't just holding it, I was like swirling it around and stuff.
Good thing you didn't break it.
Thank God I didn't drop it, you know. He got a kick out of it. My wife tells that story about a million times. She got a kick out of it, you know. But yeah, we were lucky. Exactly. We got to go twice, and it is what most people don't realize, it's like a 6-hour affair. You got to get there so early, unless you're like a movie star. And then when you walk the red carpet, if you're people like us, they do everything they can to get you off of the red carpet. So that from the minute you walk on the red carpet, there's somebody behind you saying, can you please get into the theater? Can you please get into the theater? And both times we found a way to kind of like stand to the side, because you know you want to see the stars coming in. You don't want to be sitting in the theater for 2 hours. It's literally two and a half hours for the show starts. And so both times we found a place to stand where they weren't shushing us in, and we were able to stand till like, you know, 10 minutes before the show started.
Oh wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
All right, cool. Okay, well, thank you very much. This has been such a fun group of days talking with you about this movie. Thank you very much for your time, Joe.
Well, thank you for doing it. You know, I
always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm very glad that we were able to do this. And my friend, I want you to stay safe. I want to hear nothing but good things.
I'll do my best
from you. And again, thank you for doing this film. It's worth it.
All right. I appreciate that. So why don't you once again tell people where they can find Joe?
Sure. They can find me on our website, virgilfilms.com. We have our, you know, Facebook page under Virgil Films, and way of getting in touch with me.
All right. Great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So I will be back tomorrow for the penultimate episode of this season. So please come back to listen to that. And until then, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.